Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
When Forbes magazine recently published its list of the world's 100 most powerful women, no one was surprised to see that Princeton had the most grads on the list. But can you guess which school had the second most? Was it Harvard? Yale? No. It was Trinity, a tiny, little-known Catholic school in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., a school for girls. Nancy Pelosi, the country's first female Speaker of the House, and Kathleen Sebelius, two-term governor of Kansas and current Secretary of Health and Human Services, are graduates, as is Kathy Black, who's been chair of Hearst Magazines and chancellor of New York City Schools. And then there's Maggie Williams, Hillary Clinton's chief of staff. Trinity was founded in 1897 by the feisty Sisters of Notre Dame, who made the education of girls their charism or mission. In the 1950s, the school thrived. Then-president Sister Margaret Clayton told Time magazine, "We're not in the business of training committee women or bridge players." After she became speaker, Nancy Pelosi quoted from Matthew in explaining how the gospel of responsibility and social justice was ingrained in her at Trinity. But in later decades, as more educational opportunities opened up for Catholic women, Trinity went into a decline. That's changed, as we're going to explain. But first, the history of this fascinating school. The current president, Pat McGuire, a 1974 graduate, joins us now. President McGuire, Pat, first of all, you say there are many unsung graduates as well, but why did Catholic women have so few educational choices before Trinity?
Well, it's fascinating. Historically, Catholics were considered to be a minority in the United States back in the 19th and early 20th century. Actually, they were quite reviled and looked down upon, and so Catholics had to create their own schools, colleges, and universities, and within that sector, Catholic women were even more marginalized. So the Catholic women's colleges became great institutions. Trinity was the first, founded specifically as a college. Many more followed. And over the years, Catholic women had very few choices for higher education because also among Catholics, co-education was discouraged for many generations, not today, but in the past.
We were reading in the Washington Monthly article that the concern was, as they chose to go to secular schools, it was sort of like making a choice to give up their souls.
Absolutely. When Trinity was founded in 1897, it was on the cusp of a movement of Catholic women who wanted to go to college, and there were 20 women who had been rejected by then 10-year-old Catholic University of America. And those women went to scandal, places like Bryn Mawr and Vassar, and the nuns were scandalized that Catholic women were going to non-Catholic institutions, and that was part of the drive to create Trinity as a place where Catholic women could come, be formed in the faith, but also be formed with the fire of justice and desire to change the world that the Sisters of Notre Dame had, that charism.
Well, and tell us more about these nuns in particular. They were not opposed to occasionally standing up to the church, defying the church?
I love the story. St. Julie Biart, who founded the order, started her order in France after the French Revolution to educate girls who were orphaned in the French Revolution. Well, she caused such a stir that the bishop told her to pipe down, and instead of piping down, she picked up her order and moved to Namur, Belgium, and that's why today they're the Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur. She just moved to a new place to keep doing her work. In 1897, when the nuns tried to found Trinity, there was a great outcry from the right wing of the church that educating Catholic women at the collegiate level would be a heresy. And the nuns were so determined, the two of them got on a train in Washington in August of 1897. Think of how hot it is today. They wore full habits. They took the steam train to Atlantic City, New Jersey, to argue with the papal ambassador that Trinity should be founded. They went up, they made their case, and they returned the same day on the steam train, all because they believed women should have a higher education.
They continue to be pretty subversive. We mentioned the president in the 50s who still lives at the school who said she wasn't training bridge players.
Yes. She often said, "We have a college for women, not for little girls."
And I'm thinking of, you mentioned some of the graduates are unsung, and We remember when, I think, then 73-year-old Sister Dot Stang was assassinated in Brazil.
There was Dorothy Stang, who chose her mission in life to live among the indigenous people in the, along the Amazon. And no one would have ever heard of Dot Stang and her great life except for the fact that she was assassinated by people hired by the logging industry who did not like the fact that she was defending the homes of the people who belonged there against the development interests.
Question for you, though, and we want to get to more of the history of the school and what happened and then what's happening now. But I'm hearing some of the words that you're saying, mission, charism, Nancy Pelosi crediting the school with her deep feelings of social justice. You know, a lot of Americans cringe when they hear about a religious backing to a politician's mission. Nancy Pelosi, the day she became speaker, she attended a special mass at Trinity, and it was picketed by anti-abortion protesters.
Yes.
You called the Archbishop of Washington and said this mass is not going to be canceled. But here, we even within the Catholic Church, you have this divide, you know.
Yes.
Do you at all worry about that, that people might see this as just a parallel reality of others of deep evangelical faith bringing their beliefs to Washington?
Well, first of all, our faith is not evangelical. I'll separate us from that. But in fact, we believe that, that the value system that each individual has and is developed not separate and apart from their belief and their faith. And we as Catholics certainly are taught that we must stand up for our values in the public square. And yes, sometimes those values seem to clash even one from the other. You know, that many who consider themselves to be good Catholics may not may have vigorous disagreements with each other or even with the bishops. I always say that our faith is so strong that the argumentation will not undermine it. In fact, we teach our students at Trinity both to stand up for value, but also to know how to be persuasive and effective and influential without being ugly.
That's Pat McGuire, president of Trinity Washington University, Trinity College as it's known, the first college for Catholic women in the U.S. It now accepts men as well, as we'll hear, and we're focusing on it because Forbes magazine found this little school graduated more top women leaders than any other school in the country except Princeton. We're going to have more. Also later, New Jersey begins its school year with a new anti-bullying law. Some say it's the toughest in the country. But is it too much? Schools are required to investigate bullying charges within a day, among other requirements. Also, where is the line between on-campus and off-campus bullying? That's later. Back in a minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Pat McGuire, president of Trinity Washington University, which started as a Catholic women's college in 1897 when sending women to college was deeply controversial among Catholics, and Catholic women and men were not welcome at mainstream schools. Now, when Forbes magazine published its list of the world's 100 most powerful women, more were graduates of Trinity than any other college except Princeton. And the list includes, as we just heard, Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi. But President McGuire, Pat, at some point, things changed. There wasn't a stream of women coming to Trinity. There were things, as we said, like other colleges accepting Catholic women and also the new Vatican II missives that liberalized Catholicism.
There was a fascinating thing that happened in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, and it wasn't just changes in the church. I mean, Vatican II had a great impact on religious life and also the women's liberation movement. Women who wanted to be powerful in 1960, if you wanted to be a woman CEO or a president, you probably had to join the convent, even if you were Episcopalian, because it was only nuns who could be in charge of stuff professionally. That all changed 10 and 20 years later. So women had more professional opportunities in the secular society. The other thing that happened with Vatican II, it liberalized religious life so that religious women realized they had more options. But other things happened as well. The Ivy League and then the great public universities soon began to welcome Catholics in very large numbers, and that was part of the changes in the perceptions of the Catholic population.
This is so fascinating. I mean, these are the kinds of pieces of history that the younger people on our staff, like, you're kidding. But it was after John F. Kennedy's election that people started to accept Catholics in that way.
Absolutely true. And the Kennedy election was a turning point, because before that, Catholics were viewed with great suspicion, and Catholics, frankly, were not welcome, and Catholics took that and didn't want to go. So it was both ways. It was an integration that occurred in higher ed, very similar to racial integration and also gender integration. I mean, there was a time when women were not allowed to go to universities because they were considered too delicate. And once the men's universities discovered that women were powerful and strong intellectually, they wanted them and welcomed them in great number. So that also happened to Trinity and other, not only Catholic colleges, but women's colleges generally, was that women flocked to the great men's universities in the 70s and 80s. Title IX changed that also, because Title IX meant that the women who went to the formerly male universities, especially the athletes, got to have all that glitzy stuff that the guys got. But the women's colleges still only had their stuff. So we found a competitive disadvantage over time that we're just now beginning to address and rectify.
Well, in fact, you're an example of how there were more options for women, because you were assistant dean of Georgetown Law, came back to Trinity, and are credited with helping to turn the school around. Why? What happened?
Well, a couple of things happened in the 1990s that helped us regain our balance, and these great Sisters of Notre Dame were right at the center of the turnaround. We were trying to figure out when our population of young women enrolling in our women's college at Trinity had declined to about 300, and we were trying to figure out how to get them back. And one day in a board meeting, one of the sisters stood up and said, "Why are we trying so hard to get the traditional population back when there's hundreds of thousands of women at our doorstep here in Washington who desperately want a higher education?" And we founded Trinity for women who could not have access to higher education. And what was she talking about? She was talking about women of color. She was talking about low-income women of many different ages who needed a place that would welcome them. And so starting in the early 1990s, Trinity embraced the women of Washington, including a majority of African American and Latina women, and a majority of women whose economic circumstances are not as great as the former middle class population. Many of our students today are young mothers and middle-aged mothers, and they go to class from 8 in the morning until 10 at night. We kept our women's college at the center of Trinity. We have almost 1,000 students enrolled this year in the women's college, but we also created some other coeducational parts of Trinity, different academic schools, so that now men can also enjoy some of the programs that we have, although women's education remains our forte, our strong center.
Have you been able to keep the education standards as rigorous?
Today, our faculty is every bit as rigorous. Our students are very different. This is very true. We hear today a lot about college students being underprepared. We hear about concern for collegiate students' success. Well, at Trinity, we had to tackle those issues long before this became a national issue. Half of our students come from the District of Columbia, and the D.C. public schools' problems are well known. But once those women come to us, they must learn how to do the same things we knew when we first arrived when we were students. Some of them don't know how to do those things, so our faculty has the additional both task and joy of helping those students get caught up. We don't call it remediation, we call it education. For some of our students, that might take 10 or 12 years, actually. So our students also bend the idea of time. Traditional notions do not fit non-traditional students when it comes to being successful in college. But eventually they are successful. They still go off to law school, they go to graduate school, and they are employed in excellent professional jobs.
That's Pat McGuire. She's currently the president of Trinity. She's a 1974 grad. And it's a conversation prompted by a recent Forbes magazine list of the world's 100 most powerful women, behind Princeton, the school with the most grads on that list, Trinity College in Washington, D.C. Pat McGuire, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you. It's been great.
And a quick program note here. The 10th anniversary of 9/11 is approaching, and we know many people are dreading it. We've begun talking to some, like Rhett Miller of the band The Old 97s. He kept a diary of that day in New York.
Flames shoot out either side of both towers. Flames shoot out of the building that God damn it. Okay.
Next week, the impact of 9/11 10 years on, including the diary of a resident of downtown New York on the difficult memories of that day. That's next week. Latest news is next, here and now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England, and now including Connecticut, online at haslaw.com. And the Institute of Contemporary Art, Boston, with works by sculptor Ava Hess on view now, icaboston.org.